From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Well, as everyone knows who listens to this show, I love hunting for a good miracle. And recently, I've been looking, turning over every rock to figure out details of the upcoming canonizations in our Catholic Church. April, Carlo Acutis, that young saint who had such a great interest in Eucharistic miracles and other miracles, and now he will be recognized a saint. And his miracle came out of Costa Rica. And just not too long ago, I traveled to Costa Rica in search of that miracle. I've also been looking for another miracle I've known for a while now, the miracle related to Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, and he will be declared a saint this coming August of next year, and I'll be leading a pilgrimage there for his canonization. People can go to 206tours.com/miraclehunter. That's 206tours.com/miraclehunter to join that pilgrimage. And I've been looking for this miracle. I knew it was from California. I knew it related to a priest from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. That announcement was just made this past week. It's official. We now know that Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez, a priest from Los Angeles, is now the miracle recipient that's being used, the miracle being used for the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati, one of everybody's favorite up-and-coming saints. So we're excited about that. And the big news, of course, is that we'll be interviewing Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez on today's program. In the past, I've interviewed any number of the American miracle recipients. We're talking about Melissa Villalobos with the Cardinal Newman canonization, or Father Michael Driscoll with Titus Brandsma. These are very recent cases of miracles approved here right from the United States. And today we've got the latest one on our show with Father Juan Gutierrez. We'll be joining him in just a little bit. And later in the show, we'll be talking with Monsignor Robert Sarno. He's a former official of the Vatican's Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, and he served as the Episcopal delegate in the diocesan process in Los Angeles for this Frassati miracle. So this is a show entirely dedicated to Blessed Giorgio Frassati, Pier Giorgio Frassati, and his miracle that was just announced this past week. We'll be talking to the miracle recipient himself and also getting sort of the Vatican look at how miracles are investigated, and especially this one. Check out my television series, They Might Be Saints, and also Explore with the Miracle Hunter, coming up on every Saturday. And on Saturday, December 28th, I look at the case in Champion, Wisconsin, where the Virgin Mary appeared to a Belgian farm worker, Adele Bryce, in the year 1859. This is the first and only church-approved Marian apparition in the history of the United States. So check that one out, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, coming up on December 28th. And later in the show, we'll be looking at the might-be saint of the day, Blessed Anton Durocevici from Austria. And the December 21st is the 365 Days with Mary project item, and also the Great Mother of Austria. So we have two Austrian devotions to look at today. And that's, of course, Maria Zell in Austria in the year 1157. The question of the week: why do some martyrs require a miracle and others do not to become saints? We'll try to answer that tricky one later in the show. And the miracle of the day for December 21st happened in the year 1932. On that occasion, Our Lady with the Golden Heart at Borang said, "I am the Immaculate Virgin." We'll be talking a little bit about that later in the program. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week, where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And this was perhaps not a true miracle in the sense we point to Eucharistic miracles and Marian apparitions and things of this high level. You might remember a few years ago when Notre Dame was burning down in Paris, and somebody rushed in and rescued the Crown of Thorns, that amazing relic that was housed there in Notre Dame. And the news this week, and perhaps that's a miracle in and of itself, that somebody risked their life perhaps to run in and save that amazing relic. And the news is for this week that the Crown of Thorns has returned to Notre Dame de Paris. and it's perhaps the greatest relic in all of Christianity, the Crown of Thorns. It made its grand return to Notre Dame of Paris on December 13th during a solemn and fervent procession. The Crown of Thorns under guard as it returned to its rightful place in the heart of Notre Dame. Now, 5 years ago, the parish fire department, and in particular its chaplain, Father Fournier, extricated it from its reliquary just as Notre Dame was threatening to be utterly destroyed by flames. And on Friday, this relic, this precious relic of Christianity, was brought back in a solemn procession made up of 80 knights of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem. And their mission is to support the Catholic Church in the Holy Land. And they ensured the security of the Crown of Thorns for a century. And it was carried on this cushion made of red velvet. A crown visible through the crystal case was set with precious stones, and it passed through a cloud of incense amidst the congregation of the faithful. And everybody's heads were bowed, knees were bent, and the cameras were on, all focused on the relic. And we have a quote here. "We have come to rediscover and venerate the Holy Crown of Thorns, to recognize it as an eminent sign of the passion of our Lord Jesus Christ." And that was from the Archbishop Laurent Ulrich as the crown arrived in the choir. Quote, "What brings us together this evening can only be understood in the very history of the weakness of the derision with which he is burdened and through which the glory of God is revealed," end quote. So a big day. This is a big thing. Of course, the reconstruction of Notre Dame of Paris, and a huge moment to see the Crown of Thorns, that amazing relic being returned to that site. So check out the Miracle Hunter Facebook feed for more information on that. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in the fastest with the correct answer. Last week, we asked the question, how many people have gotten an official Lourdes cure in an English-speaking country? And John Traynor was announced just last week from that. And we had an amazing interview with Dr. Alessandro De Franciscus, the head doctor there at the Lourdes Medical Bureau. He gave us the whole background of how that was investigated and approved. And so the question was, how many other miracles besides that one have ever come from an English-speaking country? John Traynor was from England. And the answer is zero. That was the very first miracle from an English-speaking country. Of course, many miracles from France and Italy and throughout Europe, but there's never been another English-speaking miracle before this one. So that's a pretty interesting trivia point from last week. Now, this week's question was, who was the last non-American to have his canonization miracle from the United States? So we're looking for a saint whose canonization miracle came from the United States. And just a hint, this happened just a couple of years ago when we interviewed him on our radio show. So the miracle recipient, that is, not the saint. So again, that question is, who was the last non-American saint to have their miracle come from the United States? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com. And the fastest winner, fastest one for right answer will be the winner. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, the very person who received the miracle that's leading to the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter. On EWTN, here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who listen to this show know I love talking about American saints and miracles happening right here in the United States. And we have a new saint that's going to be canonized on August 3rd of next year. And that's Pier Giorgio Frassati. Of course, the Carlo Acutis canonization happens in April, and then Pier Giorgio Frassati in August. And we had news leaking out of Rome over the course of the past months about the miracle that was needed in order to elevate Pier Giorgio from blessed to saint. In every canonization cause, one miracle gets you to blessed, one miracle after that gets you to saint. And we heard the news from Pope Francis himself, who announced that there had been a miracle, but many people were wondering, what, in fact, that miracle was, who it was, and where it came from. And we're so excited, just this past week, in a press conference from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, to learn about the miracle that came from there with Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez, his remarkable healing, and that was validated in a diocesan process, and then by Rome, the medical commission, and they found that it was a case of singular intercession through Pier Giorgio Frassati, and that will lead to the canonization coming up in August. And I'm so excited to be going there myself and to be leading a pilgrimage there for that canonization. Well, we've got a very special guest with us today, and that is the miracle recipient himself. That is Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Welcome to the program today, Father Gutierrez.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'm excited to talk with you today, and this was big news in the press conference coming out with Archbishop Gomez leading the way, and you gave a great testimony this past week, and it was live streamed for the world to see. Talk a little bit about what all this attention has been like for you. I think that a lot of people are excited about your story. They're excited about Pier Giorgio Frassati, and your miracle plays an integral role in boosting him ahead to sainthood. Talk about what it's meant for you to experience this moment.
It's obviously a great blessing that I received in 2017. At the moment, I didn't think that this was going to be anywhere other than me writing a simple testimony, emailing it to somebody, an organization that has devotion to Pier Giorgio, and that was going to be it. I never thought that the event of my healing was going to lead to something like this. And it's been an exciting journey, sometimes a scary journey, a stressful journey, but at the end of the day, it's a journey of inspiration, of hope, and of a lot of joy.
Absolutely. I watched the press conference this week, and I saw the school children from your parish were in attendance, and they asked you a few questions, and the smiles of everyone. Everyone was overjoyed at this incredible news, and Archbishop Gomez was there himself announcing it to the world. So absolutely amazing. Congratulations on this and for being a part of this canonization that so many people around the world have been hoping and praying for so many years. And for those people who are interested in the story, talk to us about you're like Pier Giorgio himself. You're an athletic guy. You were actually playing basketball, and you had basketball injury. I had a torn ACL years ago, and I know what that's like to be on the court and for to hear that popping noise and to wonder what just happened to my leg. Talk to us a little bit about the basketball injury that set this whole thing going.
I went to play basketball with the seminarians, just as every Monday they would do. And it was actually one day before my 31st birthday. I remember I didn't warm up that day, and it was pretty early on when I joined the game that I was running. And I felt like if someone had bumped my leg from the back, and I heard the popping sound. I turned around to see who was there, but there was nobody there. And I remember I didn't feel a lot of pain at the moment, but I just started to limp. I couldn't flex my foot anymore. So that night I just went to the seminary. I thought that it was going to be something simple, but the very following day, another one of my classmates who had gotten injured at the same game, myself, he was taken to the ER to check his head because most likely he had had a concussion. And I saw him and another classmate driving to the hospital, and I just joined them just to join the ride, not because I wanted to get myself checked. But then my friend George, who is the one who drove us, told me, like, if there is something broken, you want to know now. So just get yourself checked. And then I got myself checked. They took x-rays. The doctors told me that I didn't have a broken bone, that most likely was going to be a pulled muscle. And they gave me some pain medication, and that was it. I went back to the seminary. But then one of the seminarians is a former chiropractor, and he saw me walking around, and he told me, you shouldn't be walking on your foot because you just got injured. So injuries are a common thing in seminaries, I have found out, by visiting different seminaries. And we have crutches just laying around somewhere in a closet room. So I went, found some, and I started to use them. And the chiropractor, this seminarian, told me, well, if you want, I could just check every other day how your foot is doing and do some exercises that are proper for these type of injuries. And I agreed. So he would do that, and after a few days of resting and icing my ankle, he told me, okay, now you could start doing some stretches, which we came to find out that for an Achilles tear is the least recommended type of exercises because it just makes the gap, the tear, even worse. And I would stretch my foot, pointing the toes upward and then pushing against the wall or against the pews in the chapel, and it would hurt quite a bit. But not being familiar with injuries before, I thought that it might be part of the drill. And after a couple of weeks, the chiropractor told me, you're not improving, so I think you're going to have a problem with one of your ligaments, and I think only the MRI will show it. So I started to contact my primary care physician to get that scheduled. It was on October 31st that I got to get the MRI done, and precisely it showed that I did have the document of the doctor says that I had a complete tear of my Achilles tendon.
And so what did you do next? What was your next step to deal with this news?
Well, I started to Google and look for YouTube videos about Achilles tendon surgeries, and I started to hear all about it, like the long recovery, the painful recovery, the chances for infection, and that started to sink into my brain and make me a little bit gloomy about my future. Mm. So the following day was November 1st, the Solemnity of All the Saints, and I went to Mass as usual to the at the chapel seminary, and I stayed behind afterwards to pray. And I was thinking, well, maybe I should make a novena to ask God for help during this, what is coming. And novenas have been part of my life even before I entered seminary. Growing up in a Mexican culture, because I was born and raised in Mexico, I would see the celebrations of the patron saint of the town and things like that to be preceded by the prayer of a novena. And so I did, and I was thinking, well, yeah, I should make a novena. And I was initially thinking that I should make it to perhaps all the saints because I needed all the help I could get. And when I was thinking about that, I got this inspiration that maybe I should do it to Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. And the thought was surprising, but not that shocking, because I knew who he was. And I just found out who he was through a YouTube video. That same day I started my novena. The prayer was something that I came up with on my own. And it was very simple. Lord, through the intercession of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, ask you to help me in my injury. I didn't ask to be healed. I asked to be helped. And afterwards, I would pray a rosary, and that was it. There was one day in which something unusual happened. I cannot remember the exact day, to be honest. The investigators have asked me what day it was, and I cannot think of the exact day. There was one day in which I went to the chapel earlier than usual. I usually would pray my novena during the holy hour that we have at the seminary in the early evening every day. But that day I went earlier, so nobody was there. I was by myself. And I knelt down in one of the pews. And I was praying when I started to feel around the area of my injury like a warmth that was gentle, but it seemed to be increasing little by little, to the point that I thought that maybe there was something catching on fire underneath the pews from the electrical or whatnot. Mm. So I started to look around and look under the pews because we have books, so it made sense to me that if there was a fire, it was going to catch on pretty fast because of the book. And I didn't see anything. I check around. There was no smell of smoke or anything. And then I remember that in spirituality is like the charismatic spirituality and many other accounts of healings, people relate to have experienced a sensation of warmth. And then I started just to think to myself, I don't think that this is God. I don't think that God is healing me, not because he doesn't have the power to do it, but because I think that I don't have the faith for something like that. Mm. And those thoughts moved me a lot. You know, they moved me to tears, and eventually I managed to finish my prayer and I went on with my day. And I just noticed that from that day, from that moment onwards, I never thought about my injury. Again, I stopped wearing braces. At this point, I was wearing a set of different braces to help my foot be in place and not move a lot, because it would cause pain if it moved too much in the wrong position. And after that day, I stopped wearing braces to the point that when I went to see the surgeon on November 15, I wasn't wearing any braces anymore. And I thought, well, if I just go like this with nothing covering or protecting my injury, he is not going to be happy about it. So I found one of the braces that I have bought initially that was very simple, that at the beginning did very little for me to the point that I didn't wear anymore because it wouldn't help too much. So I said, okay, at least this very simple brace I'm going to put on so that he could see something. And I went to the to see the surgeon that day. I was admitted. He started to check the MRI images on the computer. He explained to me, okay, this is how we know you have a tear because of the contrast of the blood filling the gap of the tear in your ankle. And he told me, okay, now I'm going to examine you. So lay down on your belly on the bed. And he did what I'm told is called the Thompson test, which is that basically he just, with my foot slightly hanging from the bed, he presses my calf muscles. And if my foot moves when he presses the muscles of my calf, then there is no tear. The tendon is connected. But if he presses and it does, my foot doesn't move, then there is a tear. And when he pulled my muscles of my calf, I just heard him say, I remember this, but he just said, And I was intrigued myself, like, And then he said, okay, now I'm going to touch with my thumb the area of where the gap is. And I told him, okay, that's fine. He just started to pass his thumb around the area. And he said, do you feel pain? And I told him, no, not really. I don't describe it as pain. I describe it as soreness, like when you work out and the following day your muscles are a little sore. But that's not pain. I have experienced pain with this injury before, but it's nothing compared to that. He said, okay, I'm going to do it a lot harder, and I'm sorry, but I just need to make sure, okay? And I told him, yeah, that's fine. So he started to push a little harder, and he told me, do you feel pain? And I told him, no, it's just the same. I feel that you're just pressing harder. He said, okay, you could sit down. And he was looking at the floor, and I could see him puzzled, you know? And I asked him, is everything all right? And the first thing he asked me was, what did your primary care physician tell you about your injury? What was his recommendation? I told him, well, he recommended that I would get the surgery because I'm still young, I'm going to be active, and the surgery seems to be the best option. He told me, well, if your condition was any different, I will agree, but I don't think we need to put you through that. And I told him, how come? And he said, because with this sort of injuries, I am supposed to feel a gap, a hole in your ankle, but I can't find it. And I just got intrigued, and I told him, so is this... And after he said those words, he also told me, because he knew I was a seminarian, someone studying to become a priest. After he told me that he was supposed to be able to fill the gap, the hole, but he couldn't find it, he told me, you must have somebody up there looking after you. And when he said those words, just chills came through my body, because at that moment, I remember my incident at the chapel. And it's when I knew, so that's what happened when I went to the chapel and I felt the warmth around my injury or the area of my injury. And I started to get a little nervous, but I just thought to myself, don't ask any faith questions, just ask science questions. And I asked him, so doctor, is this normal? Is it common for these injuries to close on their own? And he told me, no. What is common in these injuries, this type of injuries, that they open even more, especially with an injury as old as yours that is almost 2 months old. And then I asked him, well, maybe the MRI was wrong. And he chuckled a little bit and told me, no, this is the most advanced piece of technology we have to diagnose this kind of injury. So looking at the screens, he told me, as of October 31st, you had a tear in your Achilles, but I can't find it right now. And I told him, can you give me that in writing? And he said, yeah. And he told me, come back in a month so that I could send you to physiotherapy. I told him, I'm going to be on winter break by then, and I'm visiting my family in Nebraska, so I won't be back until January. He said, okay, just come back whenever you're back from vacation. And I never went back.
Absolutely amazing. We've been talking today with Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles about the miraculous healing of his torn Achilles tendon, and that healing is now leading to the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati next year in August. Truly amazing. And Father Gutierrez, what did you do with this news? I know you somehow contacted Monsignor Sarno, formerly from the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. In your press conference, you mentioned you were in some kind of a class with him, and you mentioned the healing to him eventually. Talk a little bit about the process that happened next. After you got the ball rolling and you sort of submitted this, how long did it take, and what was it like to go through the diocesan process for interviews and investigation of this potential miracle?
Well, I actually didn't want to tell anything to anybody. I didn't want to call attention to myself. I didn't want to make a big fuss about it. It was something very special to me. But I did promise during my novena that if something unusual would happen, I would report it to whomever I needed to report it. And what I thought it was is I would just write a very simple testimony of what just happened and email it to one of those organizations that promote devotion to Pure Georgia, and that was it. And that's what I did. In July of 2018, I wrote something and I sent it, and to me, that was the end of it. That was it. But the providence of God is different. So he just arranged that Monsignor Sarno came to teach a class at our seminary that was not even intended for us, the seminary. It was a class on how to start a cause of canonization at the diocesan level. And it was around COVID times, more or less, and other people from other states, from even other countries, will connect in through Zoom to have a class with him. Mm-hmm. Because they wanted to start canonization causes where they lived, but they didn't know how. And since LA was hosting Monsignor Sarno, they just placed him at the seminary, and eventually they planned, like, why don't we open this class to the seminarians to become an elective class? Monsignor Sarno agreed, and I was convinced by the registrar to take this class, and I did. And along the way of covering the material, when he started to describe or teach about what the process like to prove a miracle for a canonization class, I started to see that maybe my incident was checking all the boxes. But I didn't want to say anything because I thought, okay, this is a special event in my life. I really cherish it. Sometimes I used to call it my little miracle, but I don't think this is something like that. For this sort of things, you know? And Monsignor Sarno has this New Yorker personality about himself that I was like, no, I'm not going to tell him because he's going to chop my head off. And I didn't, but at the same time, I would pray, like, Lord, if this is something that needs to happen, just give me the courage to say it. And when we finished covering the section on miracles, everything in my head said, this checks all the boxes. So one day after breakfast, I just told him, Monsignor, I need to tell you something. I told him exactly the same story that I just told you, and he just looked at me and said, why didn't you say anything earlier? And I told him, because you're very intimidating. And he told me, yeah, I get that a lot. So he told me, well, from now on, you tell nobody about this, because anyone who could be a potential witness cannot have their testimony contaminated with the press. We need to find out what they remember from the moment everything happened. And he told me, and you already know because of the class, that we need to prove the medical part and the theological part. The medical part, is this unexplicable according to medicine or science? And the theological part, is there enough evidence to prove that only the intercession of Pier Giorgio Frassati was requested, only his? And they do that through witnesses, and they did find the witnesses. It takes a long time, and we learned this in his class, before you hold a formal trial, a canonical trial, to investigate this sort of events, you run other confidential trials before to see if you're going to have success when you start the formal trial. And let me tell you, I'm blown away of how many saints we have considering the rigorous work that takes to prove miracles like that. And it was a roller coaster of emotion. I was happy some days, I was stressed out some other days, I was sad some other days, because for a long time it looked like this was not going to be what the Vatican was looking for. Because Monsignor told me, it might be a miraculous healing, it might be the case, but it just may happen, like many other times, that we cannot find the evidence to prove everything that we need to prove for the trial.
Right.
I told him, okay, well, that's fine. And especially because some doctors were saying, oh, this is absolutely normal. In about 4 weeks, someone could recover from this. But what they didn't know is that I received some treatment that would make my injury worse, mm-hmm. and that I never took the proper sort of treatment, which is to completely immobilize my foot for at least a month, day and night, and that never happened to me. So eventually, Monsignor Sarno, it was last year that the official trial, the official investigation took place here in Los Angeles. all of this is under absolute secrecy. And it was pretty amazing to be part of, to be honest. I told Monsignor Sarno after the opening session, Monsignor, one thing is to take your class on the cause of canonization, and another thing is to be to live your class.
Yeah, you absolutely lived his class from start to finish, receiving the miracle and going through the whole diocesan phase, having it being sent to Rome and then investigated and validated as a true miracle. It's absolutely incredible. Well, the whole church is so grateful to you for speaking up to Monsignor Sarno with your experience and for God using you as an instrument to bring this miracle forward, and those people who are devotees of Pier Giorgio Frassati and otherwise, and who love to hear the stories of miracles, are so heartened and excited to hear your amazing, amazing story of your healing. We're so grateful to you, Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez, for joining us on today's program and telling us the amazing story of your healing. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless. That was Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, sharing with us the incredible story of his healing from an Achilles tendon tear that's going to lead to the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati next August. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. I like getting the email questions, of course, but I also like answering questions in person. I travel around the country. I give maybe 20 talks a year to different shrines and parishes and events. And I give my presentation sometimes about Eucharistic miracles or Marian apparitions. And afterwards, I open it up to questions, and people hit me with questions for 15, 20, 30 minutes or more, letting me know what they're thinking about it. We had a great question coming into the email inbox today. The question says, Dear Miracle Hunter Michael, I'm a distant relative of a man, Alberto Cristicelli, born in Italy in the 1800s. When he was 26, he became a missionary, and he was sent to China where he was martyred. He was beheaded near a river with a rusty sword, as the story goes. And growing up, we had pictures in our home honoring him when he was blessed, and he was pronounced a saint in 2000 by Pope John Paul II. So here's my curiosity and question for you. He was canonized a saint in 2000, but yes, to be a saint, I thought you had to perform a series of miracles, or if you're martyred as a missionary, is that enough to be called a saint? I'm confused and trying to figure out if he worked any miracles. Most sincerely and with respect, Mary Therese from Toledo, Ohio. Well, thanks, Mary Therese, for your question. And it's a good one and very interesting that you have a familial connection with this Saint Alberico. And so I did a little research on Saint Alberico, and it turns out he was canonized as a martyr from a large group of martyrs in China, 120 of them in particular. And you are correct. Most individuals who are martyred, they get a decree that gets them to blessed, but then they need one miracle to move from blessed to saint. So in the case of non-martyr saints, you might say you need two miracles, one that would be for blessed, and then a second one to get you to saint, according to John Paul II's new rules on that. But to become a martyr saint, you normally will have, we will get the decree of martyrdom from the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints, which will get you to blessed, and then some later miracle will lead to your sainthood. And so there are exceptions to this, however, and your Saint Alberico falls into this. Oftentimes, when there is a large group of martyrs, in this case 120 of them, who are martyred all at the same time, the church doesn't sort of dice it up and look for miracles for those individuals or look for miracles performed by that group, just because maybe that would be confusing for the faithful to direct their prayers in the appropriate way. And so what they tend to do for large groups of martyrs, the martyrs of Oronto is another one, where they will canonize, move everybody all the way through the process, martyr, saint, all in one fell swoop. So that's what happened in this case with your relative there, Saint Alberico Cristatelli from Italy. So he was moved ahead all the way to become a saint in that canonization. So thanks so much for your very interesting question, Mary Therese. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day. For today's date, on December 21st, we have the Great Mother of Austria from Mariazell in Austria in the year 1157. The story goes that there are three legends about the Magna Mater Austria, which is the Great Mother of Austria. She's a 48-centimeter tall statuette made of linden wood. On December 21st, 1157, a monk named Magnus was sent into town as a minister. When his way was blocked by a rock, he set down the statue, and the rock broke apart, clearing the way. On a nearby bank, he built a chapel and living quarters. The second legend relates to how Henry Margrave of Moravia and his wife, having been healed through the help of Our Lady of Mariazell, made a pilgrimage to that place around the year 1200. They built the first stone church on the site of the wooden chapel. The third legend recounts Hungarian King Ludwig III's victory over the Turkish army. Out of gratitude, he built that Gothic church there. And that is the Great Mother of Austria of Mariazell from the year 1157, celebrated today on December 21st. For more information on this project, 365 Days with Mary, you can go to the Facebook page, 365 Days with Mary, and join any of the 10,000 other followers who are there getting a daily devotion to Mary. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood. And we're talking about venerable servants of God, blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are declared saints in Rome. And so we always try to give you an update on who's coming down the pipe as far as new saints and the declaration of saints. And so the sainthood news for this week, the nuns of the Dialogue of the Carmelites have been proclaimed saints. And this very week, Pope Francis approved the equivalent canonization of Blessed Therese of St. Augustine, Mother Superior of the Carmelites of Compiègne, and her 15 companions who were assassinated during the French Revolution. In an equivalent canonization, that means the nuns have not gone through the complete lengthy process for usual canonizations, but that their sanctity is simply recognized by the Pope. And these nuns are particularly famous around the world due to a 1956 opera, The Dialogue of the Carmelites, by Francis Poulenc, based on their work by the same name by Georges Bernanos, which was itself based on the Song of the Scaffold by Gertrude von Lefort. Now, the Carmelite nuns were guillotined in 1794 during the closing days of the Reign of Terror during the French Revolution. Now, after threats of denouncement in a climate of persecution in the church, the nuns were taken from the Compiègne to Paris by cart, and they were brought before the Revolutionary Tribunal in 1794. They were condemned, executed that same evening there on July 17th in the Place du Trône, the place of the nation, and all their bodies were thrown into a commune. Their crime, fanaticism, and sedition was what the public prosecutor said, and their story made a lot of noise and became anchored in popular memory, especially since when they went up to the scaffold one by one, each of the nuns kissed a little statue of the Virgin held in her hand by her prioress, and before being guillotined in turn, the prioress gave the statue to the crowd, and it became a relic preserved and prayed for in front of, even today, in the crypt of the Carmel of Joncaire. In the eyes of the church, it is clear that the 16 Carmelites died because they did not want to renounce their faith. They are recognized as martyrs, and they were beatified on May 27th, 1906 by Pope Pius X, and their feast day was included in the liturgical calendar on July 17th, their date of death. And so this is now a set of saints that we have coming to us through equivalent canonization from Pope Francis. Each week we'll be announcing all the new sainthood news coming your way. And let's take a look at the Might Be Saints, Might Be Saint of the Day. Today we've got Blessed Anton Drogvicki from Austria. He was born on May 17th, 1888 in Austria, and his father died when Anton was small, and his mother and brother moved to Lasi in Romania in 1895. He studied in Bucharest in Romania and in Rome. He earned multiple degrees, including two doctorates. He was a priest in the Diocese of Bucharest, and he was ordained in 1910. He taught at the seminary, the parish administrator in Tulcea in Romania. He became an Austrian citizen, and he was imprisoned by an internment camp during World War I when Romania joined the Allied forces. and he was freed by the order of King Ferdinand I. He was the Bucharest of the Bucharest Seminary. He was the rector of the Bucharest Seminary from 1924 to 1948. He was the bishop of Iasi in Romania in 1947. In the post-World War II period, he became a vocal opponent of the communists in Romania. He was arrested on June 26, 1949, and he was shipped from prison to prison, tortured, abused, starved, left naked in the winter weather, and he was killed as a martyr. And he died on December 21, 1951. Of abuse while in prison, while buried in an unmarked grave, and most documentation of his imprisonment was destroyed. He was declared venerable by Pope Francis on October 13, 2013, and he was later declared a blessed by Pope Francis on May 17, 2014, and that is the might be saint of the day, Blessed Anton Dyrkovicki, who lived from Austria from 1888 to 1951. With one more miracle, he will become Saint Antoine of Austria. And that's today's Might Be Saint of the Day. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Monsignor Robert Sarno, formerly of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints in the Vatican, talking to us about the behind the scenes of the approval of the Pier Giorgio Frassati miracle. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We always get excited when there's news coming out of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. Perhaps a decree. There was a decree this last November that actually verified what we're talking about today. And that, of course, is the big news, the announcement of the miracle related to the canonization of blessed-to-be future saint Pier Giorgio Frassati. And for Americans who are following this, they're excited to learn the news that someone from our own soil, someone from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, a priest, Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez, received a miracle, and that was actually validated by the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, and that will be used now for the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati, one of the very popular saints that people are excited about, and we'll see his canonization coming up in July of next year. And I'll be headed there myself and leading a pilgrimage there, so I hope that people can join me for that. But we're so excited today because we're joined by a very special guest, and that is Monsignor Robert Sarno. He's a former official at the Vatican's Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, and he's been involved in the diocesan process in Los Angeles for investigating this miracle that was just announced this past week in a press conference with Archbishop Gomez leading that and presenting on the case of the miracle. And we saw the miracle recipient himself, Father Gutierrez, telling in both English and Spanish the story of his remarkable healing. We welcome to the program today Monsignor Robert Sarno. Good morning, Monsignor. Thank you for joining us today. And it's so interesting to me. Of course, you have this history, past history, as an official from the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. But you personally are connected with this case of the healing of Father Gutierrez. Tell us a little bit about how you first met Father Gutierrez.
Well, it's a very kind of a strange thing because I retired in February of 2020 from the Dicastery in the middle of the COVID epidemic or pandemic, and I was not able to go back to New York until July, and I had been awarded a chair of canon law in September in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles to be held at the seminary, and I taught a course on causes of canonization. And one of the students, as I was finishing the class on miracles, came up to me, namely Juan Manuel Gutierrez, who is a seminarian for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, and wanted to tell me his story. And when he told me his story, I thought that it was really a solid case. And so I asked him if he would be willing to have an MRI just to make sure that he was completely healed. The supposed miracle had taken place in 2017, and my first contact came with the now Father Father Gutierrez was in 2020, and he agreed to have the MRI. And when we saw the results of the MRI, I got in touch with the postulator of the cause, who is Dr. Silvia Correale, who represents the Catholic Action of Italy who are the promoters of the cause, and they agreed that there was indeed substance to the case which would warrant a full-blown diocesan investigation. At that point, I got in touch with the diocesan officials of Los Angeles, particularly Archbishop Gomez, who was more than happy to give me permission to be his delegate for the instruction of the case. And so that's how I got involved in it. That's how I met Father Gutierrez, who was then Mr. Gutierrez, and got involved in the investigation.
Yeah, truly, truly amazing. I'm quite sure that it doesn't happen that way for most causes, that they bump into you and they forward along a potential case. So that's absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Monsignor Robert Sarno about the case of Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, some kind of a healing from a leg injury. Tell us a little bit about his case, if you would. Tell us, he was playing basketball, as the press conference stated this past week, and he had some kind of an injury, an Achilles rupture. Talk to us a little bit about what he sustained in that accident.
Well, basically, as he was playing basketball, he heard this sort of like a crack or some sort of a sound. And then, of course, he started to feel a tremendous amount of pain in his ankle. And so he didn't go to the emergency room that night, but the next day, I guess the pain must have been a bit too much. And so the seminarians, his brother seminarians, convinced him to go to the emergency room. And when they performed, they did x-rays, presuming that it was probably something to do with a muscle or a bone, and everything came out pretty clear. So they told him that it was probably just a sprained muscle, and so when he returned to the seminary, there was a seminarian who was a licensed chiropractor, and on the basis of this diagnosis of a pulled muscle in his ankle, he underwent therapy, physical therapy with the chiropractor. After 3 weeks of physical therapy and a worsening of his situation, the chiropractor obviously said to him, there must be something more seriously wrong because you should have improved by now. And so he suggested that he call his doctor and go get an MRI so that they could see the tissue that would not come up in an x-ray. And sure enough, as he was driving back home from the MRI, he received a phone call from his doctor who said, look, you have a damaged Achilles tendon. You better get to an orthopedic surgeon right away so that, you know, you can be operated on and it can be fixed. Because apparently there are two types of repair work on an Achilles tendon. One is if you're young and you're going to resume a life, an active life of activity, sports, and social activity, and they operate right away. If you're an older person and you're not going to be resuming any kind of an active sort of a sportsman's life, they will put you in a boot and arrange it in such a way that the Achilles tendon will basically heal itself. In Juan Gutierrez's case, the therapy of the chiropractor was actually indirectly damaging and making the case worse. So on October 31st, Juan had this MRI, which showed the damaged Achilles tendon, and his doctor arranged to see an orthopedic surgeon the following November 15th, in other words, 2 weeks later. On November 1st, Juan, who really was not anxious about having about having surgery, decided to start a novena in the Mexican form, and that basically is a rosary plus prayers to the individual whose intercession you want to seek. Now, Juan had gotten to know about Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati actually from the internet, from YouTube, having seen a YouTube story about Pier Giorgio Frassati, who was also the co-patron of World Youth Day and who himself was a very active sportsman. And so Juan began to say the rosary and pray each day for the intercession of Pier Giorgio Frassati. And about the fourth or fifth day into the novena, we're not exactly sure, but it's more or less the fourth or fifth day into the novena, Juan was in the chapel of the seminary praying when he felt this tremendous amount of heat in his leg, in his ankle. And as he himself said, at first he thought it might have been a fire in the seminary chapel, and he looked around and saw nothing, but yet felt this heat in his ankle. At that point, he felt much better and didn't feel the need for crutches or limping. In other words, he seems to have been returned to normal activity. On November 15th, when he went to see the orthopedic surgeon, the orthopedic surgeon performed seeing the MRI and explaining to Juan what was going on in his damaged Achilles tendon, began to perform the two tests in which they verify the presence of damage to the Achilles tendon. And upon the examination, the doctor basically turned to Juan and said, "Somebody up there must like you because you have nothing." And so Juan went home and never underwent any surgery or any therapy. And so that basically is how it happened.
Yeah, truly, truly amazing. We're talking today with Monsignor Robert Sarno, former official of the Vatican Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. We're talking about the sainthood cause and the miracle that's just been announced related to Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, who in July of next year will become Saint Pier Giorgio Frassati. And when we talk about cases of miracles, we're talking about this. We always talk about the Lambertini criteria, this criteria that was established by Prospero Lambertini, an Italian cardinal born in the 1600s, who wrote down the rule book, perhaps you might say, for investigating and validating medical miracles. We talk about the condition must be serious, not liable to go on its own. It must be an instantaneous, complete, and lasting cure, and there can be no medical treatment that relates to the cure. And Monsignor, when we talk about the medical treatment that was initially received by Father Gutierrez, we talk about some minor physical therapy or something that was actually potentially hurting his Achilles tendon, not helping it. So we don't see any medical treatment having been applied in this case. Is that correct?
Well, what you said first is very correct. In other words, based on the diagnosis in the emergency room, the chiropractor then began to perform physical therapy upon Juan in terms of what his diagnosis was, not knowing that the diagnosis was not correct, and therefore the physical therapy performed by the chiropractor was actually damaging the Achilles tendon, making the situation worse. It was the perspicacity, the intelligence of the chiropractor, who after a few weeks of some physical therapy said to Juan, "Wait a minute, you should be better by now, you're worse." He said, "There's something else going on here, you really should go for an MRI," and that's how it snowballed.
We're talking today with Monsignor Robert Sarno about the case of the miracle received by Father Manuel Gutierrez from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, a complete healing of a torn Achilles tendon. And it's truly amazing. And this is going to lead to the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati.
Correct.
And we've been talking today with Monsignor Robert Sarno about the miracle that was just announced from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, with received by Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez. And as we wrap up the interview today, Monsignor, talk to us about what events like this miracle of Father Gutierrez and the elevation of Pier Giorgio Frassati to sainthood coming next summer. Talk to us about what meaning and inspiration it can supply for Americans and faithful around the world.
If you look at the life of Pier Giorgio Frassati, two things come out very clearly. Number one, his normality. He was a normal young man who lived his life with his friends, with his family, although his family was a little bit problematic. But he lived a very normal life of a student, of a sportsman. He liked to hike. He liked to go into the mountains with his friends. And there are some beautiful pictures on the internet, on YouTube, of Pier Giorgio Frassati in his sports life. But what thing comes through is a very normal kind of a person. But the other thing that comes through, which, of course, Pier Giorgio didn't play up and kept it very quiet, was his incredible dedication to the poor. Even though he came from a very wealthy family, he was known to constantly give money to the poor. One day, someone knowing that Pier Giorgio had this reputation knocked on his door And when Pier Giorgio saw that he had no shoes, Pier Giorgio took off his shoes and gave them to him. It was a kind of a life in dedication to the poor and to the downtrodden and to the abandoned that most people don't know about Pier Giorgio Frassati because of this idea of his being a normal kind of everyday guy who went out into the mountains and hiked. And even, I think there's even a picture of him smoking a pipe, this kind of normal kind of existence. But it was basically animated by a deep faith and a love of the poor that Pier Giorgio has a message not just for young people, but for all people, and particularly for the young, because he gave a normal direction of Christian and Catholic living, how to be a Catholic in today's world, to which so many young people are searching for meaning and for how to live the Catholic faith in today's world. And I think Pier Giorgio Frassati is a very kind of normal human being. In other words, he lived the ordinary in an extraordinary manner. And I think the message of Pier Giorgio is a combination of this obvious normalcy and this hidden love and dedication to the poor that makes Pier Giorgio a very attractive and kind of ethereal figure, and yet something so down-to-earth and real.
Very well put. Well, we're so grateful to you, Monsignor Robert Sarno, for talking to us today about Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and also the new miracle that was just announced this past week coming out of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, the healing of an Achilles tear for Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez. Thank you so much, Monsignor, for joining us on today's program.
You're welcome. Thank you.
God bless. That was Monsignor Robert Sarno, formerly of the Vatican's Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, talking to us about Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and his upcoming canonization and miracle. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Father Juan Manuel Gutierrez, talking to us about the miracle he received through the intercession of Pier Giorgio Frassati, and also Monsignor Robert Sarno, formerly of the Dicastery of the Causes of Saints, for giving us the insider's look at the approval of that miracle. We're so excited about the upcoming canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati that'll be on August 3rd of next year. For people who want to go to that pilgrimage and do a pilgrimage of Rome and see that canonization, you can go to 206tours.com/miraclehunter. That's 206tours.com/miraclehunter. And you can join me on that trip. Hope to see you there. And check out my series, Explore at the Miracle Hunter, on December 28th. I'll be going to Champion, Wisconsin, where the Virgin Mary appeared to the Belgian farm worker, Adel Bryce, in the year 1859. This is the first and only church-approved Marian apparition in the history of the United States. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Merry Christmas, everyone.